Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 114, I chat with Ron Williams about 4K and 3D. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded June 4th, 2012, episode 114, 4K or 3D. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of hometheater.com. This week's guest geek is Ron Williams, CEO of Landmark Consult. Well, let me try that again. The Landmark Group. Sorry. Start again. Three, two. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of hometheater.com. This week's guest geek is Ron Williams, a consultant in the film and TV industry. And we're going to be talking today about 4K and 3D, two of my favorite subjects in the whole world. Hey, Ron, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Scott. Good to be here.
Yeah, so nice to have you back. You were on, I believe, just about a year ago. So nigh time to get you back. So I'm really glad you're here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the thought.
Those who are watching the show live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Ron, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Ron, we're going to be talking about 4K and 3D today. And I know that the Digital Cinema Initiative, or DCI, has established certain standards for 4K as opposed to 2K, which is sometimes confused with 1080p. Can you clear us up on all that?
Yes, this is an interesting way of getting to nowhere, actually. We started out with the SMPTE DC-28 Standards Committee, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, who write the carve things in granite for the world to work to. Mm. And along the way, with the bureaucracy and the discord inside the industry, the DCI, Digital Cinema Initiative, which is a syndicate of the seven major studios, basically, they said, well, we can't write a standard, but we'd like to write a guideline to what our industry is going to. So as time progressed, I'm going to kind of split in two directions here. 4K has been around for a while because NHK, the National Television Network in Japan, who is really in the forefront of all of our technological leaps. I mean, they went to 2K, then the 4K systems, and they're now working and transmitting 8K in Japan.
Good grief. Crazy.
Yes. it never stops. So in that process, we have in our high-definition television system 1920 by 1080, obviously.
Right.
Well, we had to rein in the marketing people from the TV manufacturers and the professional equipment manufacturers and saying, oh, it's 2K. Well, no, 2K is 2048. High definition is 1920. Doesn't seem
and we're talking about difference. We're talking about the horizontal resolution in that case.
Correct. And it doesn't seem like much, but you know, as I said, my example in my lectures are at that point there's a brick wall. 1920 by 1080 back, meaning going back towards NTSC, is a television signal. And you can do anything you want to it, look at it here, there, plug it in, and it's wonderful. When you get to 1920 and above, it's data. So you have to look at it in a viewer, computer, proprietary piece of equipment, or something. So with that brick wall there, when someone says, oh, it's 2K, you have to distinguish what they're talking about. So when we get into 4K, we have a similar situation. True 4K, as we wrote the DCI standard, is 4096 horizontally.
Mm-hmm. By what vertically? 2160, I believe.
Could be 2400 or 21.
Okay.
It'll vary. The monitors and TVs that they're producing right now is 3840 by 2100.
Uh-oh, it seems like that might be another cause for a brick wall, a slight difference between what's being called 4K at 3860?
3840.
Compared to true 4K, which is 4096.
Correct. So as in high definition at the time when actually the Europeans, I think you remember because you were quite a little bit involved in it, is that there was a confusion of what was high definition for a set that a consumer would go buy. Mm-hmm. And because it was 16:9 wide aspect ratio, I mean, there were some manufacturers putting out 1024 resolution in a 16:9 saying, oh, look, high definition. If you remember those days.
I do. The early plasmas, in fact, a lot of them had 1024 horizontal resolution by, I don't know, 576 or 768 or something.
Yeah, 768, right.
Right, so and they called that high definition, and I would argue that point.
and the Europeans did, so finally they woke the world up since we have the label in the name Full HD on the televisions that you look at, and that designates that it is 1920 by 1080, whether I or P, but it's mostly P now. So right. You knew when you were purchasing your television that you were getting the full resolution that was being transmitted.
And these days, manufacturers do use that term full HD all over the place to refer to exactly that, 1920 by 1080 pixel resolution.
Exactly. And that has put the consumer in a good place to knowing what they're buying.
Right.
So as we progress forward into this 4K world, I've been doing 4K since about 2000. Either in transferring film, monitors. I was involved with a monitor that Landmark actually put on the market for a while. It was IBM, ViewSonic, and Landmark had what they called a 4K computer monitor. But in today's standards, because it was 3840, we now, as we have come up with a term of full HD, we now have a term for this 4K situation. And the 3840 is now called Quad HD.
Which makes perfect sense because it's twice the resolution horizontally and twice the resolution vertically, which means it's four times the number of pixels exactly.
But ironic enough, when the signal comes in, they tile it actually in four quadrants. So it is that way, but it's four quadrants, so it is literally quad HD. The monitors are fed right now, the early ones, they're either being fed by four HDMIs or four DVI connectors. HDMI 1.4A is theoretically, on the specifications, capable of carrying one 4K 4096 signal.
Right, but only at 24 frames per second, I believe. Correct.
That's true. That is true.
In film, okay, so it wouldn't be video at 4K. It would be film at 4K.
Exactly. But as we progress, I'll straighten that out as well.
Okay. Good.
Back then, when we were producing these monitors, the entertainment industry didn't really embrace it. Knowing that the DCI and the SMPTE standards were going to be 4096, this was 3840. It's kind of close enough for post-production work. We really don't need to see all those pixels out to the edge. But they didn't understand it was coming faster than they thought. So what we did is we ran off to the automobile industry and just sold a lot of monitors to the car design places because they were doing AutoCAD and the high-resolution monitor, because that was the time when they were starting in AutoCAD to fit the car pieces together by computer.
Right.
So if you could blow it up, because those monitors had, at that time, 9.2 million pixels on a display, which was quite unheard of, they could fit these pieces together in their AutoCAD and with almost zero tolerance, and everybody was happy. But the film industry still didn't get it, which was rather perplexing at the time. So we're still doing 4K film scans, and actually with the Imagica scanner, we were doing 8K scans. So in doing 8K scans of a movie, you would down-res it into 4K. You had a beautiful picture.
Yeah.
But we don't have a workflow for 4K. So what they would do, we worked in a 2K proxy.
What does that mean?
It's like a thumbnail of the actual full resolution picture. It's basically half res. So you can't really grade or do quality control on the image. It's just done for effects and done for editing. And then when all of that's done, you take the edit decision list, the EDL, and you apply it to the 4K signal and put it into a computer, and it spits it out wonderful.
Gotcha.
So we've got movies in 4K, and most everything that's done is in 4K.
I mean, even if it's shot on film, it's digitized or scanned to 4K these days, right? So the content is out there.
Oh, yes. Very much so. Very much so.
And certainly certainly films or movies, I should say, that are shot on a digital camera these days mostly are shot with a 4K camera, 4K resolution, right?
Well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
Right now, the camera of choice is the Arri Alexa, and it's still in 2K.
Oh, but really? Oh, okay.
The Sony F65 and the Red Epic are outputting 4K. So those are the two.
I believe Peter Jackson's using the Red on The Hobbit. I heard that anyway.
Yes, he's using the Epic. Actually, you know, the backstory on that is Peter told Red, if you get this camera out on time, I will use it exclusively on this whole series of movies. So needless to say, Red jumped and got the Epic.
Hustled their buns, as it were.
Yeah. Not without some problems, but, you know, that's the way the world works. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the Hobbit is going to be put out in 4K. But oddly enough, 4K production is more prevalent than one would think. Now, I'm going to relay this story to you, and it's not going to make much sense, but I'll try to explain it.
Okay, so good.
A lot of television production, HD, 1920 by 1080, are moving to the F65 and the Epic to record television in 4K, 4096.
Really?
Yes. A lot.
Wow. I had heard somewhere that the majority of TV is now shot digitally and not on film. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I would say 80% of anything that goes out over the air is done with digital acquisition. Absolutely.
Wow.
Most of all episodic that's done here in Hollywood is on, I don't know exact percentage, but I would be safe to say 70% is on the Arri Alexa. It's all digital acquisition.
So that's a 2K.
Yes, that's a 2K. But it's still digital acquisition in a digital workflow.
Right.
So the idea of doing film and et cetera, that's kind of off the independence, art movies, and things of that nature at this point. But there are still a lot of A titles that are being released that are shot in 35. There's still a lot of director of photography, the DPs, still want to stay with film depending on what the project is. And of course, when they're hired on to a film, that's their choice. Am I doing it digital or am I doing it film? And they just go with whatever he decides to work with. So that's kind of where we are moving in that direction. But to further explain the 4K in television, In Sao Paulo, the network down there that's doing, they do five or six soap operas. And they just bought something like 10, 12 Sony F-65s to do soap operas.
Wow.
Say, wait,
boy, talk about the soap opera effect. We talk about that a lot with LCD TVs and frame interpolation, but holy smokes, a soap opera in 4K?
Well, it kind of makes sense because there is a premium for the camera, obviously, but they weighed the cost of post-production versus the cost of the camera. And in the post-production process, if you have a 4K camera and you know you're going out to HD, but yet again, one day they're going to be transmitting 4K, and we'll get around to the cable companies dealing with 4K here in a minute. They're archiving the soap in 4K. The quality of the down-res to 1920 by 1080 is stunning. It makes a beautiful HD picture.
Right. And this is a point I want to make sure everybody understands, that shooting or scanning at a higher resolution than you're going to end up with really does result in a much better picture quality at your final resolution than shooting, acquiring, or scanning at the resolution you want to end up with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely does. The other advantage that I really didn't think of until I talked to the guys from South America was, well, we can take a 4K camera and we can go out and shoot backplates. So when you do a green screen, which is the keying process, the picture,
that's when you're going to overlay some other background digitally generated or whatever in front of actors who are actually acting in front of a true green screen.
Exactly. And they replace the green with the backplate video.
Right.
So, okay, this makes sense. So they say when we go out to the B unit, goes out and shoots all the backplates of a, you know, mountainous scene or a ski area or whatever, and come back and we do the key, we can zoom that backplate in and out and pan it anywhere we want it, and still have plenty of resolution to make the high def look great. Because they have twice the resolution, they have twice the picture area.
Right. Exactly right.
It's cheaper to go out and just flash out this camera and come back and with whatever you've got. Post doesn't care. We'll work with whatever you shot because we can zoom it in and out and pan it around and get whatever we want.
See, this is the reason why a lot of people in digital photography go, oh, well, the megapixel wars doesn't matter. You know, you can stop it at 8 or 10 megapixels and it really doesn't matter. Well, I disagree in that the more resolution you have, the more freedom, flexibility you have to crop and do other things with the image and still maintain and still end up with a really nice looking image, even if you had to crop out a small part of it.
I agree. I do that. If I'm taking some pictures of people, I just hold a camera up with one arm and just click, click. And they say, why aren't you going to frame it? I can frame it in Photoshop.
Right. Exactly.
I don't need to do that. I can frame it there. So in production, 4K has a definite advantage. So we covered that.
I do want to bring up there's some stuff in the chat room. Let me just bring that up real quick. JTAP points out that the Red Epic is actually 5K. And I would add to that the Sony F65 actually has an 8K imager. But what you're saying, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that what they output is 4K.
Yes, that's absolutely true. No, the Epic is 5K and the Sony is definitely an 8K sensor. At the National Association of Broadcasters convention we had a couple months ago, Panasonic was saying we're coming with a 4K camera. And we kind of said, well, yeah, right. Well, why wouldn't you? But the guys talking under their breath was saying, well, we're not going to come out with a Me Too because we know that there are several manufacturers, and I've got their literature. They're producing a 10.2K imager. So for the next jump for these guys to come out, because you usually want to double the sensor to the video that you're going to be dealing with.
You mean double the sensor to the output?
Right. Sony has an 8K sensor, so they're putting 4K out. If theoretically another manufacturer had a 10K sensor, they'd be easy putting 5K out. So you know, it's that war. But bear in mind what I mentioned at the beginning of NHK. NHK, for the last 3 years, has been demonstrating their 8K television system. And so we know it's viable and it's coming. But then again, the higher resolution, higher frame rate has its advantages. But we always said, why? Why?
Well, this is a big question, particularly on smaller monitors, smaller displays. There are a lot of articles starting to appear now about 4K being useless on anything larger than, you know, a giant screen, 120-inch screen, depending on how far away you're sitting, of course. But I'm wondering why television and film production people would want a 4K monitor, a small 4K monitor, if you can't really see, if your eye can't resolve that much detail.
Well, to answer that, we'll go back to my entrance into the 4K display back in 2000. It was, well, when you put an image out, as we were just talking about flashing overhead and then getting back and looking at it, you can zoom in and zoom in and zoom in.
Right.
Well, the 4K on a small monitor, we were up against the situation with the 50-inch monitors. You still have to be 4 to 5 picture heights away because you don't want to see the pixel structure.
Right. And this is with the high def. This is what with 1920 you're talking about, right?
Yeah, even the high def monitors from Panasonic, from Astro, Sharp, there's a certain distance that you have to stay away from them. But in 4K, just as with the Landmark monitor sitting on an AutoCAD desk, you can work at 6 inches and have perfect, crisp, clear images.
Mm-hmm.
So with that resolution and a smaller monitor, you can get up there and you can, you know, interrogate that image, you know, and be satisfied that what you're seeing is what you're getting.
Now, so I can understand. Sure. So I can understand why that would be useful then in a production environment or a post-production environment. But what about in the home? I mean, people aren't going to be sitting 6 inches from their screen.
No. But you did bring up a point about the bigger screens being an advantage at 4K.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the ones that I mentioned by the manufacturers out are, I think the smallest is 58 inches. Of course, Panasonic has that 107-inch plasma 4K.
Oh, it's actually 152.
Oh, it's now 152. Okay. But, you know, everyone says, oh, my God, that's a great big monitor. But I think you and I know, but we'll share with the viewers what that actually is. They didn't build a monitor that big. That is the piece of mother glass that they hack up to make all the smaller monitors.
Right.
So they just
exactly
take
right.
mother glass and light it up and say, oh, my God, look, we've got a great monitor.
This is a term, by the way, I don't know if a lot of listeners will recognize the term mother glass. Is a term that plasma and LCD manufacturers use for the biggest piece of glass that they can get that they then cut into smaller sizes for 50-inch TVs or 55-inch TVs or 60-inch TVs. And the size of mother glass has been increasing over the years. I don't remember what the biggest mother glass is now, but that's a term that we hear quite a bit from these manufacturers. And so what Panasonic did was they just took the mother glass, they didn't cut it up, and they said, let's make a plasma out of that.
Okay. We'll light it up and, hey, look at the picture. But
right.
Scott, you've seen it, and anyone that goes to our trade shows, when you see 158-inch emitting display at 4K, it's rather impressive. It's very impressive.
No kidding.
So, you know, going into that world, I don't think any of the manufacturers that I know of are going to make anything smaller than a 58 for 4K because of that.
Right, and exactly. That, I would tend to agree.
That kind of pushes us right into this other discussion that we were going to into 3D versus 4K.
Right, exactly. Although I will tell you this before we leave this, just let me make a point here that while I agree and I can certainly see how, you know, the human visual system only has a certain amount of acuity. And if you get pixels that go down below that size, you're not going to see a difference in detail. Having said that, however, I will also say that when I look at 4K displays, even small ones, at a distance farther than my visual acuity would seem to indicate that I couldn't see any difference, there is somehow a qualitative difference. It just looks smoother to me, and I don't know whether I'm just fooling myself or what.
No, I think what you're seeing is the fact that the pixels are so small and so close, it's bordering on it is similarly if you would look at a magazine. You know, you don't see the structure, and it's smooth because the pixels are kind of not overlapping each other, obviously, but they're so close together and they're so small, distinguishing two pixels from each other is very difficult. So that the color, the typical, oh my God, picture is always of a far view of New York City or of Athens or a city that is very busy in their skyline.
Right.
And you look at that, and if you see it in even high def, there is definite lines and structure there. But in 4K, when you see it, it's very close to like seeing it with your naked eye. It's smooth, and it has a texture. And that I think, is the attraction. Several years ago, well, it's two years ago, I was working with JVC in their 4K projectors, and they wanted to do a test. And we did this test, and they said, gee, this came out so well. Let's take it to CES. And they put it a theater in CES and then took it on off to the photographic electroimage conference in San Jose. What we did is we did a double stack 4K in 3D. So you were actually
that means
seeing,
using two projectors, two 4K projectors, one of which showing the right eye, one of which showing the left eye.
Correct. So we have 4K in each eye, which had never been done before, but the total temporal perception was actually 8K. And in fact, JVC is the projector that NHK uses when they're demonstrating their 8K camera system. They double stack 4Ks to show 8K. So, you know, we have the basic elements here from going on to these higher and higher resolutions and frame rates. And you get the easy frame rates in a projector rather than in a monitor. So with this, we proved that this works quite well, and the audience was really quite taken back by it. Mm-hmm. So as things progress, there was actually three, and the one that I know of Quixel in the Northwest, they did consumer testing. They did a couple hundred people, 1920 by 1080 3D in a straight, well, it was quad HD, 3840, they called it 4K.
Mm-hmm.
They ran similar material. And they said, well, which one of the, they were trying to fool them and saying, which monitor do you like? And they didn't tell them what the images were. And over half the percentage came back. They chose the 4K quad HD over the 3D. Because if you get good 4K, it is, as we were talking about the Panasonic plasma, it is rather stunning, and it does have a depth quality to it.
Yep.
And you can't really see it, but it pulls you into the image. You know, you just get kind of involved in it. And that's what 3D does. But obviously, that is main plane back. and there's nothing, you know, shooting out towards you like the 3D.
Right, as there is in a 3D brought, you know, some sort of 3D production movie or something. Right. Well, this is a point that, that Leo Laporte often makes, that that he prefers 4K over 3D because 4K gives you a sense of depth without needing to wear glasses. He will also say that that he himself is not as sensitive to the 3D effect as some other people. He has basically poo-pooed it as not really important. I argue that I happen to like it personally. But I do understand what you're saying, what he's saying, that 4K actually gives you a sense of depth without having to go through the whole stereoscopic thing.
Oh, I agree with him 100%. I've been in that camp for quite a long time. But it's not unusual. You know, we look at the king of 3D, Mr. Cameron, and I've worked with him several times on projects.
Mm-hmm.
And he does 3D very well. I mean,
I agree.
He has the knack for knowing where to put that depth perception. He does. But you look at Avatar, and almost the whole movie in Avatar was, as we say, main plane, which is the screen you're looking at,
right,
back in depth.
Right.
And almost the whole movie was done that way. And I think that's why the audience accepted Avatar so well, because it wasn't that cartoon stuff flashing out to your nose.
Right, right. It wasn't the cheap tricks, as it were.
Yeah, it lent itself to the story, and he did it very well in his trip to the Titanic, the second movie.
Which was a conversion.
Yes. Yeah. There's some great software. There's a company called In3 that does stuff like that, and it's phenomenal how they do that. And it's I know a couple companies have been working on the first Star Wars going to be converted into 3D.
Well, it already was. The episode one was converted into 3D. Did you see that conversion? I did, and I was not at all impressed.
No, that kind of fell into the world of the 3D camera rig guys were really happy when Clash of the Titans came out. that one was a total conversion.
And it was done bad.
Not so well. And they said, that just proves you have to shoot it in 3D. You can't convert.
Although Cameron, I think, disproved it with the Titanic conversion, because I think that was very good.
Yeah. It's the software's coming along quite well. JVC has a conversion box, and they actually had me fooled for about 15, 20 seconds. And I looked at Steve and I said, something's not right here. And he looked at me and smiled and he says, yeah, it's not a 3D camera. It's a standard camera going through our converter box.
Interesting. But it fooled you into thinking it had been shot in 3D for a few seconds.
Yeah. Until I stared at it for a while, I said, well, there's something wrong here. This isn't quite right. So he says, yeah, you got us. We're running it through a converter.
Right.
So these converter boxes are creating product for the home, converting movies, etc. The big thing for 3D, obviously, everybody knows and agrees it's going to stay around because of sports. And there's no two ways about that.
Right.
4K.
We're going to see the Olympics in 3D. So I've heard something like 200 hours of it is going to be available in 3D.
And it's going to be stunning. There is no two ways about that. You know, so there is a place for that, and there are a lot of naysayers that say 3D is just another fad as it has been for the last 50 years. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's everybody has a taste, and it's going for it. And I think when they see 4K, there's going to be a great following for that as well. Getting it to the home, I know Cable Labs, the consortium of cable companies in Colorado, has been pushing around 4K images now for several months successfully. I know Verizon, Fios, obviously with fiber, they've got the bandwidth to do it.
Right.
But they have to be conservative with their bandwidth. So that's working well. So the delivery of 4K to the home isn't monstrous as a lot of people thought it would be. because I think when they decided they had to do 3D in the home in HD, mm-hmm. now you're pretty close. you're sending down a lot of data for the 3D.
Well, so true, except for the fact that at least in broadcast terms, 3D broadcasts are typically what's called over under or side by side, in which either the horizontal or vertical resolution is cut in half in order to make it what's called frame compatible, I think, wherein so really you're not getting true 1080p in each eye on a broadcast signal. Or do I have that confused?
No, you're correct. You know, the side-by-side is half vertical.
Right.
But I'll be honest with you.
Half horizontal. Over-under is half vertical.
Yeah. Right. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah, that's all right.
They're both. There's six, one half dozen other ones.
Yeah, exactly. You're getting half the resolution one way or the other. Right.
Yeah. But again, it works because the temporal perception, the way people look at it, it's not noticeable. You know, geeks like us look at it and we get in there and we measure it and we do the specifications and everything. You look at it and say, this damn thing's only half resolution. if you put that in front of your wife and kids and say, okay, what do you think about it? And they're going to say, it looks great.
Right. So another point to make about that very thing is with LCD TVs, 3D TVs that use passive glasses, they do the same thing. They cut the vertical resolution in half so that every other line goes to the left eye and the alternating lines go to the right eye. And yet, and sometimes you can see sort of black lines, thin black lines, horizontal lines. But overall, I have to say that when I look at that picture, I see more detail than 540 vertical lines would imply that I could be able to see.
That's true, because that's why we use the term temporal perception. Because everyone's going to see it a little different, and some people have the ability to fill in where there is nothing. And that's why that temporal perception is used, because, you know, I have the ability to do that. I look at something and I'll say, I know it's not there, but I see it. So then I have to go and double check on what I'm actually looking at.
Right.
And I look at a lot of images.
Yeah, well, true. You and me both, pal. Hey, listen, before we go on, and I've got a bunch of questions in the chat room I want to get to, but before we do, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which, of course, is Netflix. Which may someday, who knows, be able to stream 4K to our homes. But for now, they're doing a fine job of 1920 by 1080. And you can get that on your TV, or you can get it directly to your TV or to your Blu-ray player, your game console, your computer, to a wide variety of streaming boxes like Roku and Netflix and Boxy, I should say. I've been using the Boxy box lately to get Netflix into my home theater, and just works great. You can even start on one device and finish on another. You can even watch not only on your TV at home, but on your cell phone, your smartphone, iPhone, some Android phones, some Windows phones, your iPad. Just about any device that'll display video will be able to receive Netflix streaming video as much as you want for one low subscription price. And in fact, you can try it free for 30 days. Just go to netflix.com/twit and be sure to use that URL, because that'll let them know that you heard about it here. netflix.com/twit. And we thank Netflix very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire Twit network. So let me get to a couple questions here in the chat room. Hermes asks, are any DSLRs doing 4K yet? And the answer is, I know of one. 4K video, I assume, is what he means there. The new Canon DC1, I think, that we saw at NAB, is shooting 4K video, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, Canon's doing a great job in the DSLR, and they have their CE300, and at NAB they introduced the 500, so that right. Canon's taking that technology and going into motion picture cameras as well.
right.
at that 4K rate.
Let's see. Oh, I got some questions about frame rate too, which I do want to spend some time. Hermes also asked, where do I go to see a 4K display?
Oh, at this point, I don't think any of the consumer outlets are even demonstrating them. We obviously, Scott and I, have the advantage of the manufacturers at trade shows and symposiums showing it.
Right.
But they are available. You can buy them from Panasonic. There's a company, Astro, that puts one out. Actually, I think Panasonic's got two of them. I think.
Yeah, but those are pretty expensive.
Those are monitors. They're not TVs.
Those are monitors, yeah. I was going to say that in quite a large number of digital cinema theaters these days is a 4K projector. The Sony digital cinema projector is, in fact, 4K. It has 4K resolution. But the problem is there are very few, if any, movies. I don't know of any movies that have been released to those Sony projectors that are, in fact, at a native resolution of 4K. Do you?
No. I don't know of any myself. They're all standard 2048 DCI standard specification files that get shipped to it. But then again, it's one of those situations where the Sony 4K is a great projector and all, but its material is half resolution. So there is some artifacts that you're going to see there if you know what you're looking for, because you know you've got a big engine pulling a little wagon along, so to speak. They're not taking advantage of it. I applaud the theater, the exhibition people for making the step into 4K, knowing that it's inevitable that they're going to be doing it. Mm-hmm. But personally, my opinion on that is I think the theater owners thought that the studios would be releasing 4K material far, far before this. So they were just a little premature with the projectors.
Yes. And then there's the question, as we were talking about a bit a moment ago, of getting 4K into the home. And I'm not sure if it can be done with broadcast bandwidth, at least not without some significantly better data compression. And streaming, you're going to need a whole heck of a lot more bandwidth than most people have, even with a highly compressed image. What do you think?
That one is a perplexing question to a lot of people, because, you know, in broadcast it's 6 megahertz, and that's why they don't do 3D, because there's just no way you can back that into 6 megahertz. There's just, that's almost
full HD in both eyes, you mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're running, well, two channels.
Now. Yeah. Essentially. Yeah, that's right.
And here in Los Angeles, you know, the possibility could, in the wildest imagination, could work, because we have CBS owns two television stations and Fox owns two television stations. So they do have two transmitters. So, you know, maybe we could talk to somebody and at 3 o'clock in the morning do a test.
Right. Exactly. Very good. Yeah. Now, we've talked about 4K. We've talked about 3D. There's a third element of change, if we can say that, in the whole video and movie world, which is higher frame rates. And we talked about, we've I think alluded to that slightly, but I'd like to dig a little deeper into it for the moment, because as I think we know, Peter Jackson not only is shooting The Hobbit at 4K resolution, and in 3D, using two RED cameras in a rig side by side to actually shoot real 3D. But he's also shooting it at 48 frames per second, twice the rate that virtually all movies up till now have been shot at. What's that going to do?
Oh, frame rate. That's, I'm on a SMPTE committee to investigate and come up with a standard for that, you know, at the present time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Jim Cameron out there in front at NAB, he did a presentation at the Cinema Symposium, and then the Christie projector manufacturer had in their booth Jim's presentation.
Which I saw, and I was very impressed with.
He's on the right track. I think Peter's, you know, kind of, in my opinion, hit the right place at 48. But Cameron went way beyond, and it was good for him to do that. Now, let me explain my opinion about frame rates.
Please.
24 frames is a movie, and we've grown up with a movie. And when that movie got transferred into video, it went to 30 frames. Yeah, okay, not much of a change. But it's still a movie. Video is live. We know that from sitcoms. We know that from the news. We know that from ENG trucks gathering news out in the field. Video is live. Film is fantasy. So a frame rate of 24 has a problem with motion blur. And this camera that I'm using is probably going to demonstrate this quite well.
I'm sure it is.
That judder that you see my hand moving back and forth is what happens when you do, as we call it, a truck. That's a parallel move to an object. You see it judder across. Or if you do a quick pan with the camera, you see the image judder. You see it kind of lags and stops for a second. That's right. 24 frames. Now you go to 48, that goes away. You go to 60, everything is really smooth.
And it really goes away.
And it really goes away. Now you're pushing another area. And then Jim did 60 frame, what they call double print, which is twice speed at 120. And he made a comment that kind of set us back a little bit. As I had just explained, film is fantasy. It tells a story. It's got a feeling and it evokes a lot of emotion. Where television or video is reality. And we've been conditioned to that. So when he was at double flash 120, his comment was, look at the motion picture. It looks almost real, like video.
Mm-hmm.
And I said,
he used the term hyper real at 60 frames per second.
And it was like, oh my God, we don't want movies to look like that. We want
Why
movies
not?
To be movies. No, we want movies to be movies. You know, would Sleepless in Seattle be the same if it were like live? I don't think so. In my opinion. This is all my opinion.
Yeah. And you're not alone. There are a lot of people who feel the same way, that they want movies to stay at 24 because that makes them look like movies.
Right. Now, 48, Peter's doing, I think, is a good compromise. Now, he's the king of fantasy. If anybody's going to make things in fantasy, it's Peter Jackson.
Sure.
So I think him stopping at 48 to get rid of the objectionable artifacts, but stay in that film look, I applaud that. And I think that's a good choice.
And not only that, but it makes it makes it very easy to take that 48 frame per second movie and convert it to 24 for those theaters that do not have the capability of showing it at 48. Much more difficult to do that with it from a 60. There are a couple of people in the chat room are mentioning Douglas Trumbull and his show scan system at 60 frames per second, mm-hmm. Which was back in the 80s, I think, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Doug's been doing that sort of frame rate thing for forever. And I would have to say, I'd have to yield any comment that I would make that he was the pioneer for changing all of these frame rates. I've talked to him many times about how and what he wants to see. But
yeah.
He has the wherewithal to do all the testing and show and improve his theories. And for a lot of years, people were going, well, that's Doug over there doing his little thing. But now, all of a sudden, oh, hey, Mr. Trumbull's got something going here.
Right, right. F-Loop in the chat room points out that last week my guest was Kevin Miller. We were talking about a face-off between various flat panels. And he said that resolution of the various performance parameters, contrast ratio, color saturation, colorimetry, resolution comes in last in terms of prefer or importance to the overall picture quality. And so F-Loop asks, would 10 or 12 bit per color and larger color space provide more improvement in the home than 4K?
Simple answer would be no. The color depth does have an impact on the texture of the image, but nowhere near the impact that 4K would have. I mean, it's unfortunate, and Scott, you brought that up from your last person that tweeted in, is that it's...
Oh, no.
Don't worry, it's gone.
It's gone. Thank you.
It's a situation that until you see 4K, you can't do the comparison. I mean, and we've played with the 4K display, the Panasonic, and I've kicked up the chroma on it to give it a little more color and contrast. And, you know, if you stay with the standard that it's produced at, it makes a beautiful picture. It really does. It's a beautiful picture.
Yeah. I think what F-Loop might be saying here is, if the content were created in 10 or 12 bit per color in a larger color space and then reproduced the same way, certainly that's what I would argue. I always do that you really want to reproduce the content as closely as possible to the way in which it was produced to get the best possible quality.
Everything we do in digital acquisition is 12 bit.
I see. Okay.
It's all done in 12 bit. Even the Alexa doing a 2K, that's still 12 bit. The 4K cameras are 12 bit, 444.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's the highest quality. Well, you know, just let the viewers understand that the quality issue also has a restriction, where the 444 term I use is it's the luminance and colors difference. Standard high def goes out at 422, 4 luminance, and 2 R minus and B minus Y. So the color.
This is, by the way, another term for that is component video.
Well, yes.
Yeah, the different signals.
Yeah. So at 444, it's the highest quality of color and luminance at a bit depth that's possible. And at 12 bits, that bucket, that file is huge.
Yeah.
You know, and moving around in my world, in the digital workflow at 4K, at 444, those files are huge.
Many gigabytes.
Definitely. I mean, the storage when we order up to do a movie was how many terabytes? Now it's how many petabytes are you going to order up? It is serious because it's oh my God. You know, the movie studios and the large post-production houses, you have to remember that when they bring in and do a feature film, it's not, okay, gee, we have a film and it's done. Every film, a title film that's produced, they have to do it 24 times. Different languages, formats, different distribution. Modern video film, and I do my some stuff there, but mostly at Photochem. When they do a film, it's like it consumes so much of the facilities because to meet a release date, they've got to come up with 24 versions by that release date. That's after the original film, the director and the producer signed off and say, okay, we're done. We love it. Ship it. Now they have to go back and make 23 other versions.
Jeez. Holy smokes. Reverb Mike in the chat room is asking, what are they watching in 8K in Japan?
The stuff that NHK shoots with the 7 8K cameras that they have produced. They hand build them because
they hand build 7 8K cameras. And is anybody in Japan actually, I mean, is that being broadcast or is that all just experimental?
It's all experimental. Ikigami has NHK uses some of theirs, and just recently JVC has a studio camera that they produced for NHK. Let's put it in perspective to our television system. It's not a surprise that NHK, and actually the BBC as well in England, when you buy a television set, you pay a hefty tax to have that television. And that money on that tax goes direct to the BBC, and it goes directly to NHK. And they have the money to produce all of these great television shows that they do, but they take a large portion of that and they put it in research and development. Now, the BBC, from my experience, puts it into production to make shows that are really cool, like you know, Doctor Who and all these other sci-fi shows.
The new Sherlock, for example, is really well done.
Oh yeah, I mean, as their advert for the BBC America is, you know, our food sucks, our traffic's terrible, we can't build a car, but we do wonderful television.
Right, exactly.
But NHK, they take the bulk of their money and they put it into R&D. And it works quite well because they funnel that money down to all of these companies, to Astro, to JVC, to Ikigami, to Panasonic. And they say, well, this is what we want and we're going to pay for it. So you take all your brain trust and go develop this for us. As I said, you know, their 8K demonstrations are JVC 4K projectors. Now, they got to that quality in that new projector because they were funded. Ikigami the same way with the cameras. They were funded. And the transmission systems are other companies, and the boxes that do conversions and stuff through Astro, again, they're funded through NHK. So the whole industry is moving forward with this push. You know, and some people look at it and wouldn't like the model, but it is going forward and it is getting better. Higher frame rates. I'm not too sure about 8K, but, you know, they're going there. I'm pretty content with 4K personally, and I've seen 8K at IFA, the International Video Conference in Europe. It's in Berlin in September every year. It was the first time I've seen them as engineering prototypes for NHK, but they showed for the first time available for sale is the Sharp LCD 8K by 4K.
Ah, how big was that screen?
That was 62 inches.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now a product from Sharp. And actually the SID, Society for Informational Displays, information I got yesterday, there was a big piece on this Sharp 8K by 4K because it's now going into mass production.
Wow. So people could actually buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming. And I think, you know, like going back to my original 4K monitor that I had back in 2000, it's going to be a niche market in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think some people are going to say, gee, if I could get one of those and it has a HDMI input, and I can output out of my computer video card an 8K image, oh my God, look at the graphics that I could do at home. So, you know, there's a niche market for all of this technology that's moving forward, most definitely, and a higher frame rate as well.
Right. But will, I mean, I guess HDMI barely is able to transfer 4K at 24 frames. I can't imagine it being able to do 8K, much less at a higher frame rate.
Well, you just put another connector.
That's true. Just do two or four HDMI connectors.
Well, as the Quad HD is being done now with four HDMI connectors.
Right.
Panasonic shipping it around. Astro is still using DVI, although that's kind of a dead format. But they're still using it, and it's still viable. So if you want to see true 8K, you just hook up four connectors and have it.
So F-Loop in the chat room is asking, what can we expect in terms of the rollout of 4K in theaters? Are we going to see that anytime soon? I mean, like I said, Sony projectors are in theaters now, but getting actual 4K content onto the screen in commercial cinemas, Are we going to see that in the next year or two?
No, not in the next year or two. I'm not too sure where the roadblock is there, because we know that the films that are being produced and going into release are archived in 4K. Now, the stuff right. that's shot, say, like with the Arri Alexa, the 2K stuff, that's what's major archive. But the upconversion from 2K to 4K is not that bad. It's far better than the upconversions that we used to be dealing with going to HD. So when you go 2K to 4K, it's not so bad at all. I could see them taking a lot of 2K material and upconverting it for 4K for release. I'm quite sure a lot of the, if we still have Blu-rays at that point,
yes.
The Blu-rays may do that. But I think my opinion, I'm in the camp of everything's going to be over the wire.
So you see the demise of physical media ultimately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole Netflix model is going to consume everything. That works so well. And
as long as people have the bandwidth into their homes.
Right. Exactly. You know, and I, you know, sorry to say, I went through that whole thing yesterday and today of making sure that my bandwidth was stable just to, in fact, do this presentation here.
Right, exactly. We did spend some time yesterday on that, but and it has worked beautifully.
Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, some of the carriers are reliable, more reliable than others, and then you don't know what's coming. You know, this fiber network had such great promise, and it's doing well. But then the cable guys, the hard cable guys, came by and they said, "Oh, we can do just as well," and they are. So. You don't know exactly what's going to happen at any one time. And they, fortunately or unfortunately, they're dealing with it in one way, but the backbone of data pipe coming to them, if everyone started doing 4K, would be nowhere near big enough to accommodate. Like the trunk that I'm on right now is only 80 homes. Oh, my God, if they had to do 80 homes at 4K and maybe five channels, that would be ridiculous.
Right. Then there's the issue of data caps, which we don't have time to talk about, unfortunately. But even if you could get 4K into your home and you had 150 gig or 250 gig data cap on your download, that would be used up in a heartbeat.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And set that off at 11 o'clock and come back at 8 in the morning.
Right. Right. And we didn't even talk about Red Ray, which is another very interesting development from the Red Digital Cinema Company. That they have a hard disk server, essentially, that will let you play 4K out of it. And they're planning to sell it on the market for $1,000.
It's amazing. That really is amazing.
And it is a physical media, though. It's actually sort of counter to what you were talking about before, about having a hard disk, not an optical disk, but a hard disk device sitting in your rack that would actually be able to output 4K to, as it happens, their new 4K projector, which they're going to sell for like $10,000.
At $10,000. Well, we'll have to take a look at that one, Scott, for $10,000.
Yes, yes, yes. We definitely will. And at that point, I'm afraid I have to cut us off because we're running a little over time and we don't want to run into the next show. Okay. So, but I do hope you will come back. You and I talked over the weekend about LED lighting. So that would be yet another show. So will you come back and join me again?
Absolutely. That's a big, hot, upcoming topic with a lot of problems. We certainly should talk about that one.
Yes. Definitely. Well, we will next time. Thank you so much, Ron Williams, for joining me on the show today in a fascinating conversation about what is to come in the world of movies and TV. Thanks so much. You bet. You can read all about Ron's business at landmarkcolor.com. My online home, of course, is hometheater.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, Home Theater Geeks will be recording on Tuesday, June the 12th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, because Twit will be covering the Apple keynote on Monday. So I have been asked to move my show to the next day, which I'm very happy to do. And I sure hope you will join me then when my guest geek will be Michael Fremmer, the editor of the new website that just got launched called Analog Planet. Michael Fremmer is one of the staunchest advocates of analog audio, vinyl, tubes, all that sort of thing. And I know he's going to have a lot of interesting things to say about that. So I do hope you will join me. Until then, geek out.